What is going on, guys? Thank you so much for being here with us on this Thursday edition of Fantasy MLB Today. My name is Joe Orrico, and I am your host, and I could not be more thrilled to welcome on our guest for today, Mr. Nick Pollock, the creator of Pitcher List. You guys know him from all of the tons of content that he puts out there. Nick, thank you so much for being with us today.
What is happening, Joe? Thank you so much for the invite, and thanks for bearing with me as I gave you an interruption. You were doing a great intro, and I stopped it. But we picked it back up. We have the energy still. No, I'm just excited to be here. And yeah, we're going to talk some pitching. Can't wait.
No, yeah. Usually when I record, sometimes I end up recording 5, 6, 7 intros because sometimes it just doesn't feel right. So you give me a chance to do it over again. So it's probably for the best. we're going to talk today about a couple of pitchers who have been performing probably a little bit better than expected, and also a couple who have not quite been up to par. And I think we're going to start with I always butcher his name. And even though I hear it on the broadcast and I hear it sometimes put slightly differently, Miles Mikolas. Is it Mikolas?
It's Mikolas.
Mikolas?
Miles Mikolas.
Mikolas. Maybe it's just listening to the Blue Jays broadcast.
Well, do you roster him on a team?
I don't have him.
Yeah, because then you would say he's Mikolas, right? Instead of Yorkolas. Yeah. You won't forget.
That's honestly a really good way of putting it. And I think maybe listen to the Blue Jays broadcast the other night. They pronounced it a few different ways. So maybe that's why I was a little bit off. He has not really been this good to this point in his career. And he's kind of been fantastic to this point. What have you seen in him that has changed from years past? And do you expect it to continue?
Yeah. Well, the second part is pretty simple. No. And I don't think anyone that has Miles Mikolas at the moment believes it either. It can be put down to this: is sinker is allowing a .203 batting average thus far after being around .275 or so in years past. Maybe it's the Cardinals defense that is doing wonderful things again, and I certainly undervalued it in 2021 that helped Adam Wainwright be who he was. And Mikolas is just pitching effectively at the moment, but if anyone sits here and expects anything remotely close to a 2 ERA, but even honestly a 3 ERA moving forward, I think that's a little suspect. Can he put up a 3.6 the rest of the way? Sure, why not? I still think that Mikolas is someone that you don't blindly start. You start him matchup based and you sit him against those tough offenses, but you should be just generally happy, especially in quality start leagues. He should be able to give you a good chance to go 6 with a decent ERA every single time out. Just sell high if someone is thinking that Miles Mikolas can hint anywhere close to the 1.96 and .98 whip that he has now.
Yeah, he's put together a couple good starts in a row against good teams, against the Mets and the Blue Jays, going, like you said, quality starts in both of them. And he has, from years past, increased his strikeouts a little bit. And I don't know if we're going to see that continue, but I agree with you. It's a good chance to sell high after a couple of good starts.
Yeah.
Is there anybody in particular you'd be trying to target if you're trying to trade him in redraft?
Well,
leagues?
I mean, on the topic of the strikeouts, what I didn't mention is the four seamer has been elevated a little bit more recently. So like a 54% high location on that four seamer, as opposed to about 43-45% in previous years, which has led to a jump in its swing strike rate to 11.6%. Yet we're still talking about like a 19% strikeout rate. So it's not something huge and massive. And now here comes Mikolas. It's nice that that's working, but it's not something that is truly exceptional. And while his slider is getting that 40% O swing, it's still a low 11% swing striker. So it just means, hey, it's easier to handle in play. It's not necessarily something that I would really latch on to, though, to think like, oh, all this contact is totally going to go his way moving forward. A .247 BABIP right now, even with that good defense last year, is a .276. I think something gives in that way that he won't hold a 7 hit per 9. If I were selling, I never have a certain player in mind. How I always do it is if I have Miles Mikolas and I'm looking to sell him to, I have too much pitching or whatever it is, I never go to another pitcher. I always go for another hitter. It muddies the waters. It's harder to translate exact value. So I would find a manager who has a backup at a position. So let's say they have 2 third basemen, and B, someone who needs Mikolas, is actually hurting in pitching, and try and find that right fit of, hey, they can give up this hitter and they need Mikolas and it's someone of decent value. How you translate what value that hitter is up to you, but obviously it's not going to be a stud hitter. Don't go crazy here. But also, I wouldn't be giving up Michaels just for some bench spot. It would actually be a starter, considering how consistent he has been for your team thus far.
So you expect that he'll be someone who can be a rosterable player throughout the season, or do you expect that he'll be on waiver wires by the end
Michaelis,
of it?
Michaelis, that's a good question. Either way, what do I expect by the end? I'd say at the very end, he'd be a Toby, right? And that's kind of what he is now. That is someone who you're going to be looking at the wire every week and thinking, what's the matchup this week? Oh, he's going against, I don't know if I really want to start him against the Giants this week. I might want to stream that other guy instead. That's where I think we'll eventually land on Miles Michaelis.
Okay, let's good. We dove into him enough there, I think. Let's move on to someone who has actually been not too bad going back to last season. But Eric Lauer, he's really upped his game this year to this point. Would you expect this to continue? I mean, his strikeout rate is just about 33% right now. That I don't think that'll continue. But do you expect him to continue to be excellent, or is there a fall coming, I should say?
Yeah, isn't it cool how well, like, I mean, he's striking out so many guys. It's kind of funny. You know those times when you say something about a player in the offseason, and you're like, oh, I really like this guy. This is going to work out because of X, Y, and Z. And then they do really well. And then people think, oh, man, you were right. I was like, but I wasn't, because I didn't expect him to all of a sudden add a tick and a half to his fastball. You know, and so with Eric Lauer, last year he added a full tick on his fastball to 92.5 from 91.5. In it, we saw a 14% swing strike rate all of a sudden. Like, whoa, hold on a second. That's really cool on that four-seamer. So I thought, hey, Eric Lauer might be someone who's decent. You know, he's not necessarily going to be this amazing guy, but, you know, this is better than a lot, I think, of other guys that you might be chasing at the end of your drafts, that you might as well try to get that strikeout upside of Lauer. Then he goes and adds another 1.5 ticks. Now he's at 94 on that four-seamer and moved it from a 14% swing strike rate to a 20% swing strike rate. It is the number one four-seamer regarding swing strike rate in the majors among starting pitchers. That's insane. From Eric Lauer. So while I don't necessarily think that's going to be the story the entire year, I think it would be kind of foolish to think all of a sudden he's going to go down to a 14%, same thing as last year at this point. He clearly has found something to get that extra velocity. He talked about changes in mechanics last year by just mimicking Aroldis Chapman. And there's something to it that does make me feel like I need to hold on to Eric Lauer. I don't think I'm selling him. I don't think you can sell him for something that is relative to this value that he is generating for you now. And when the dip does come, because it should come in some fashion, 216 ERA, 0.95 whip, 33% K rate, as you mentioned, it's not going to be this dramatic one. It's not going to be one where you want to send him to the wire. I believe that entire year, especially if Eric Lauer is holding onto that velocity, which he easily could, that he's going to be a very productive starting pitcher for your squad.
The Brewers have done a phenomenal job over the last couple of years in their development of pitching. They have five or six viable starters. I mean, more than viable at the front end there, but definitely when you get down to Aaron Ashby, who's been a popular ad today, we can talk about him as well.
I love Aaron Ashby. Give him about two starts to get into his group, but he's going to be great.
Are you thinking he's an ad everywhere? I'm thinking should be, yeah.
Yes, you got it. You got to add Aaron Ashby. The whole joke is that I was at a meetup, a pitchless meetup last year, and then during the dinner of it, I literally had my phone out, and instead of talking to people, I watched the game of Aaron Ashby because I was so obsessed with him last year.
As we're recording this right now, they're actually just getting off. They've just started the game there in San Diego. So, hopefully we get a good result from him there. Tough lineup, but I think regardless, he needs to be rostered going forward there. Going back to Lauer, is there anything else you want to touch on, or are you good to move on?
I mean,
there?
It's nice to see that the sliders also increased in swing strike rate to 18% from 11 last year. I don't know if that's something we can believe in as much, but he is doing a much better job of getting that one down and away to lefties and inside to righties. The glove location is far higher than it was in previous years, which to me suggests that he is going for whiffs a little bit more than he used to. So I'm a fan of that, and maybe it does mean that the 18% swing strike rate holds there so that it can be close to 30% of a strike rate as opposed to 25%.
He's also lowered his walks to just under 5%, which is definitely a career high there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So good to see.
Let's go on to someone else who I personally have a lot of shares of, and I have loved watching him this year, Nasty Nestor Cortez. Do you think we will be able to see this going forward, or is this a massive sell-high moment for you?
I think it is a bit of a sell high moment, and I know a lot of people will be upset about that. I think a lot of the hype has come from this tweet from Andrew McCutchen talking about how his fastball plays up a lot, how effective it can be. And the fear I have is that maybe the fastball has its moments, but sometimes it's just not there. The last start we had was on Saturday against the White Sox, where he earned 2 out of 46 whiffs on that four-seamer. And I think that's a good indication of saying, hey, this isn't always going to be that offering for him. Now, he's going to have those times where he's going to blow guys away with his command of these pitches. That was against Baltimore and Texas. He fanned at least 11 in each of those games with cutters inside to righties and backdooring them, and the four-seamers up, and then sliders falling into the zone for strikes. And it's great when it's all coming together, but I do worry if there's going to be a little bit more volatility as we go deeper in the season. The command isn't as frequent, I should say. And I won't ever say that Nestor's going to be a drop, but I've had some conversations with people that really want me to push up Nestor Cortez on the list, and I can't do that. So if someone is treating Nestor Cortez like a, I don't know, SP3 or SP2 even right now, then yeah, I would go and cash in on that.
Where do you have him roughly in your rest of season?
I have him about 30. Now, keep in mind, it's not rest of season. It's if I were drafting today, because rest of season implies best ball.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
And yeah, yeah.
And we are not in best ball leagues. It's the greatest myth of fantasy baseball is that you're drafting for a best ball league. You know, all the projections, all that stuff, the fantasy pros, where you're ranking your league. Like, that's all best ball stuff, and it's not how we play.
Yeah, best ball is a little too hands-off for me. I'm definitely like to be a lot more active.
Oh, yeah. No, for the week, like, for NFBC stuff, I've been for best ball just because I hate changing lineups on Sundays.
Yeah.
but yeah, no, the daily league with recurring free agents as opposed to like a waiver every day is by far my favorite method.
Oh yeah, I actually prefer when there's no waivers. That's my favorite kind of
like
method.
Ever someone drops them, you can pick them up right away.
Well, okay, there's I kind of am okay either way with it. I guess I kind of lean towards having waivers, but I like if you look at your lineup, especially on a Sunday, if you need whatever stat. This is talking about head-to-head leagues, yeah. And you see you've got a couple of guys sitting. Maybe it's you need a stolen base, and you got Tommy Edman and he's sitting that day or whatever, you need to plug somebody in there. I hate the fact that you can't add somebody if it's just last second,
right,
kind of thing like that. So
yeah,
I'm in both kind of leagues, but I think I do lean towards being able to just add somebody right away without the whole waiver process.
Can't agree more. Way better. The only problem is that if you have, there's certain leagues where you just got to understand that people are busy and to favor one person who's working at home as opposed to someone who's not,
yeah,
it can be unfair, and I understand that.
Yeah, no, there's definitely arguments for both. This is more for
personal preference. I'm with you.
Yeah, more for personal preference there. Let's talk about one more overachiever before we get into some of the disappointments. Martin Perez, we've seen a lot of improvements in his game so far this year. Do you think this will continue with him?
Martin Perez is a guy who is a quintessential Vargas role. That is a pitcher we don't expect to survive the entire year, but because he's on a good roll, you keep rolling with him until he hits the wall. Then you let go of him. And a Vargas role more specifically can be defined by a pitcher who does not have excellent stuff. Not a high strikeout guy typically, but is surviving by featuring the best command he's had and being in rhythm with that. And if you want a good example of it, just look at Martin Perez's changeups that are just precise down and away to righties. It's insane how good Martin Perez has been lately, throwing those changeups down an arm side. And it's just that's good pitching. That's it. You know, as long as you do that, you're able to beat the Astros twice. You know, put pitches where you want constantly. I think it's going to go away. You know, I don't think Martin Perez is going to have exactly the same feel for the entire year, but he's certainly in one right now. And ride it for as long as you want. If someone thinks that, oh no, again, Martin Perez, I've got my locked starter through the year, then no. But I also don't really expect fantasy managers in your leagues to really treat him like that. So I'd say just roll with it. And, you know, when it doesn't work anymore, you just go get the next thing.
Yeah, I think it's a good time to maybe try and package him up and sell him with somebody. Maybe not on his own. He's not going to hold enough value. But if you package him up with somebody coming off of that complete game, maybe you can squeeze a bit of value out of him there.
Maybe you can, yeah.
For someone who's what is he, 31, 32? Never had one really fantasy relevant season. So it is probably more of a mirage than a true. Yeah.
I remember Martin Perez. I think he's 31 now. I think it was 2019, maybe. He was with the Twins, and the first couple months he had extra velocity all of a sudden. And I remember being like, what? What is this? You know, he was throwing 92.8 in 2018, also 94 in change in 2019. And I was so interested, and then it just fell apart in the second half. I mean, really fell apart. There's a reason he has a 5.12 ERA in 2019.
Yeah, and the career ERA is, what are we talking about, 4.58. So never really someone you can rely on. Is there anything that you can, like, I know we talked about it a little bit, but I don't really understand how he's had success to this point. Like, it's I know you talk about the changeup, but it still doesn't really.
You don't
really
understand how good that changeup is. It doesn't. You get a 71% strike rate and never throw it in the heart of the zone. Literally 0.6% heart percentage. That means when he throws 100 of them, only 0.6 of them actually land in the heart of the plate. That's pretty incredible. The average for a changeup is at least 4 of them. So he's doing such a good job at precisely placing this pitch right now. And you gotta praise him for it.
Okay, let's talk about now some guys who have underachieved a little bit. And we talked about this a little bit before we started recording. Jose Berríos, you think that we don't have to worry about Jose and he will bounce back soon?
Well, I give him the nickname the Great Undulator because every single year he fluctuates from being amazing and then bad and then amazing and bad. He just always, without fail, rotates between the two. It's why you see these ERAs roughly around a 3.7 through his career. And it's not the full season of being a 3.7. It's a season of being a 2.5 guy and a 4.5 guy and then eventually landing at 3.7. So right now, we saw in the beginning of the year that Jose Berríos was, well, he had a couple of these bad starts. He had 2 bad starts to start the year, then 3 good ones, then 2 bad ones, and now 2 good ones. And that's Jose Berríos. Even the last one against St. Louis, yes, it was 300 runs, but 7 strikeouts and only 7 base runners in 6.1 innings. Had a good curveball working for 30% CSW. I liked what I saw in that game from Berríos. Decent changeups at times as well. Good locations of fastball, really jammed guys inside the lefties. I think that Berríos is on a good trend at the moment. And anyone that sees Berríos right now and thinks, oh, this is different than the guy that I drafted. No, this is exactly the guy that you drafted. You're just seeing it in a weird package the moment 9 starts into the season. And you're not seeing it when it's at the end. When you look back and go, oh, huh, I guess he was all right after all. That's who Jose Berríos is.
Are you worried at all about the strikeouts being down 16% this year?
It's the nature of it. It'll go back up.
Okay. I'm not too worried, but at the same time, I'm definitely not thrilled. I do have him in both points and category leagues. And to this point, I mean, you can't really sell him. There's no, you just kind of have, is that what you would do? I guess you have to kind of wait it out, or there's not.
Berríos? I'd be buying him.
You'd be buying him?
I'm buying Berríos everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, okay. It's about, you know, you can look at whatever he's done so far this year. I believe it's like a 17% strikeout rate for Jose Berríos.
16.8, yeah.
Yeah, forget all of it. Forget all of that stuff. Jose Berríos right now is the same player as he was on draft day to me. So, from moving forward at this point, I'm in, right? And if everyone's going to be treating these 9 starts as if this is something different now, no. He just had 7 strikeouts in 6.1 innings. You worried about the strikeout rate? I'm not. You know, he's fine. He's totally the same dude. So go off again. Whatever you would have spent then, great. You can probably get him at a discount. And I think I'd go and get him.
I think I'm just a little bit more worried about him because I am a Blue Jay fan, and I was there on opening day. And
oh yeah, well that was rough, right? Imagine that. Imagine what I'm curious actually, what his ERA would be if we remove that opening day 0.2 starts, you know, 0.2 innings rather. That might actually be, you know, that's a 4.02 ERA with 1.34 WHIP. So we're already getting really close to the Great Undulator that is at 3.7 if you remove that first game.
Yeah, okay.
Right? Like
yeah.
One good start away at that point. Like yeah, that's what I'm trying to get at.
You talked me into it. I think I might try and buy him in a couple other leagues. I already have him quite a few shares, but I think we'll see what we can do tonight. Let's talk about Alex Cobb, who is someone I can't even begin to explain. Maybe you can figure it out. How are the advanced numbers so good, yet the ERA sits at 6.25?
Yeah, it's this wonderful thing called the hotel that is the Holy Trinity equating luck. And it is, I mean, look, I'm sure everybody listening to this has heard a lot of people talk about Alex Cobb already. But you're not supposed to have a 4.11 BABIP and a 49% left on base rate. The normal left on base rate is supposed to be around 72%. 49 is an atrocity, and it's just unjust. A BABIP, his BABIP is supposed to be around 300 or so, you know, maybe a little bit underneath that. Right now, 411. 411 BABIP. Again, an atrocity. It's so low. The main thing here is just go watch that third inning against the Mets. I put it up a video of me dealing with it. The pain is two infield singles that didn't even make it to the infield dirt. A double that looked like it was a foul ball. I even skipped it because I thought it was foul and it wasn't. And Darren Ruff missed it and like turned it into a double. Then a first pitch curveball, which is a standard affair from Cobb that Pete Alonso was just really smart on and hit it for a 3-run jack. And there you go. It's all messed up now, right? That's start Alex Cobb. He gets the Reds next. You're going to feel good with this. He's still throwing harder.
Yeah, he's someone in my piece I wrote on the weekend. I talked about him as being a strong two-start guy for this week. I feel like kind of an ass, but I mean, no. What can you really do with the
never, Joe? Never. Don't let the performance of players affect your emotions, your well-being. It's so important. These are humans, and you're human too. It's so easy for us to get attached to them, as if how they perform is on us. We're just having a discussion, right? You're not in the business of being right. I'm not in the business of being right. We're in the business of good discussion. And we enjoy this. We want to talk about it. And that's really fun. But no, it stinks that Cobb did poorly. You know, I would have started him too. So it's going to happen. Yeah,
it does
You're
make
still
me feel
good, Joe.
I appreciate that. It does make me feel a little bit better. I mentioned Tyler Anderson in that same piece. So I can
there you go.
I can put my head on the pillow at night. Let's talk about his teammate, Alex Wood. I was really big on him heading into the season, and he has not been great to this point. Do you think he is someone you can buy on? Do you think he'll turn it around?
I kind of would buy Alex Wood, too. He gets the Reds, and same kind of thing as Cobb. Start them both against the Reds. I think they should do well. I think Cobb has gotten some really bad luck when it comes to the opponent, too. He's had to face the Dodgers and Coors and the lefty-mashing Padres, and those are pretty much the bad starts that he's had this year. It might surprise you to hear that all but two of his starts have been 3 runs or fewer. And I think that his stuff is still good. You know, it's a 92 mile per hour fastball, actually sometimes 93. That's even higher than it was last year. His slider is not quite at the same level of last season. It was 22% swing strike rate down to 15% now, but it still gets a 40% O swing, still has a 48% zone rate, still has a 70% strike rate. And I think that the batting average allowed of 314 is going to go way down as that BABIP is 405 right now. That's just not what it's supposed to be. So Wood is honestly the one that is more actionable, because I think that people have talked so much about Alex Cobb's BABIP, but not the 382 of Alex Wood. And I think that you're going to see improvement from both of these guys moving forward.
I would tend to agree. I really like Alex Wood. And I think when you look at the Giants and the way that they develop pitching and the way that they not only develop pitching, but take pitchers from other locations who haven't been quite as successful, and then completely turn them around. I know he was there last year, but I have a lot of faith in the way that they handle their pitchers that come through the organization.
Yeah, well, I hope you're right. I mean, I really dig both of these Alexes. Alex Squared in San Francisco.
Alex Squared. Maybe I'll try and work that into the title somehow. let's talk about one more guy here who I was really big on last year. So last year I added him as a closer, and then he was worked into a starter. And I was kind of thought I was shit out of luck, pardon my French. And then,
come on, don't you know who I am?
And then,
no cursing. No, and then your podcast.
Oh, I'm sorry. I won't do it again. I added him as a closer, and then they worked him out as a starter, and it kind of worried me. And then he was fantastic as a starter. We're talking about Ranger Suarez. He has not quite been as good this year, not at all been as good this year as he was to end last year. You think that was just a one-off thing?
That was a Vargas rule is what it was.
Yeah.
And I watched a lot of those games because I had so many questions about it. I remember even as it was going on, I was behind on it because I didn't really believe that his stuff was that good. and he rolled with it. Really good schedule, but he did a really good job of avoiding the heart of the plate. Like we were talking about the Martin Perez, Ranger Suarez was just in a really good groove. Now, he also had a better changeup than he's had thus far. So I see Ranger Suarez as someone who over time will get better. He's, I think two starts ago, had a really good changeup. Again, didn't have this past one. But I do believe that over time, Ranger Suarez will be beneficial and he'll be a good guy to start against weak opponents. Just it's not the 1.52 ERA or whatever it was from last year. That's just not who he is. It was a Vargas rule and then the season ended and we didn't see it fall apart.
Do you so you don't see him as a must roster guy? You see him as more of a streamer?
Yeah, I see him as a Toby. To me, is a fringe guy that I understand you can hold on to and that's fine. I feel free to do that, but yeah, I'm not starting him blindly. I'm playing it matchup by matchup.
I think that makes sense. I had him in a couple of leagues. One of them was more shallow and I've dropped him, but I do understand holding on. I still remember vividly last year him really being beneficial, first as a relief pitcher and then as a starter. So definitely I tend to hang on to performances from earlier in the season than last year and hope that they can be replicated. I can't think of another example. Well, Brian Reynolds at the moment, not a pitcher, but someone who was great
who?
Last.
I have no idea. Yeah.
He was great last. He's an outfielder for the Pirates.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. He was great last year. He hasn't been good this year. And I'm getting a lot of questions about dropping him. And, you know, I don't want to because he was good last year. And you think you're going to be able to get a replica of last year. But I don't really know. For those of you who've asked about Brian Reynolds, I know this is a pitching episode, but I don't know about Brian Reynolds,
unbelievable,
honestly.
Joe. Unbelievable.
I'm sorry. I've committed a cardinal sin of talking about a position player with Nick.
Yep.
It will not happen again. We hope to have Nick on again at some point in the future. We've been talking with Nick Pollock here, the founder of Pitchers List. He's a former college pitcher and pitching coach, right? You were a pitching coach?
Yes, I was here in Park Slope, Brooklyn, and also coached a travel baseball team here.
If you want someone who his life is completely committed to baseball, you guys want to go follow Nick at Pitchers List on Twitter. He is packed with content, not just him, but all the great writers and podcasters, analysts, everybody who works for Pitchers List. They all put out great content. So you guys should go and follow him and go follow all the other people who work for Pitchers List. You guys can find them. I believe if you go through Nick's Twitter feed, you'll see a lot of people who work for Pitchers List. So go ahead and give them a follow. Thank you guys for being here with us. And of course, thank you, Nick, for joining us on this episode. Very special edition.
Oh, my absolute pleasure. And everybody listening, you should go to Apple. Make sure that you leave a rating or review for Fantasy MLB Today. Support what Joe is doing. Does great work with this. And it's an absolute honor. Yes, come on by the Pitcher List. We have so many people writing amazing work. I make the joke that I hired over 100 people so that they can write about everything that isn't starting pitching. So that I don't have to. And they do such a good job with it. So yeah, come check it out.
Again, thank you, Nick, for being with us. Guys, rate, download, subscribe, follow on Twitter. I'll give you my handle one more time, at JoeOrico99. Hit the follow button there. Again, do all that good stuff, and we'll see you again tomorrow. Cheers, everyone.